Welcome to the Life Unlimited podcast with Larry Heller. You deserve complete financial advice so you can confidently live your life your way for life. Now, let's get into this week's podcast episode.
Hello and welcome to another Life Unlimited podcast with your host, Larry Heller. All right, so we have been working very diligently on a four-part miniseries when it comes to 401ks. And today, you know, Larry, I know we talked about a lot of other stuff, but I think this is one of those sections that people are going to be really interested in because, well, we're going to be talking about plan investments. So take it away, brother.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, investments are a big part of the 401k plan. So we're going to spend a whole episode today talking about that. And I'm going to point out things that I see when I look at plans and review plans, things that people aren't aware of, things that people don't have, things that people should have. So a lot of good stuff we're going to talk about on the investment side today.
Now, we talked previously about a word that is important in the world of investments, which is fiduciary duties. So why don't we kind of set the stage a little bit about that? You can remind everybody about, you know, episode number two of this four-part miniseries, and then let's dive into how you make the investment selections.
Yeah. So part two, we talked about governance and responsibilities and fiduciary. People don't realize that they're a trustee of the 401k plan, whether they're the owner or an employee of the plan. You have fiduciary responsibility in making sure that you're selecting the proper investments, the make sure the costs are reasonable of the investments, and there's sometimes personal liability that comes along with that. So it's not something to take lightly when you're selecting all these investments. And there's been a lot of lawsuits that have come through with bigger firms that have had too expensive funds in their plans. So one of the things that we do by hiring us is you can hire any what's called a 338 advisor, and they take the responsibility away from you. 99%, the only percent that you have is actually making sure that you hire a qualified 338 and investment advisor. And now you don't have to worry about selecting the investments. You have a professional whose job, full-time job that is to select the investments. So that takes away from fiduciary duties and learn more about it in the part two of the four-part episode. So, but now let's talk about, you know, investment selection. And I've seen it all. I've seen plans where there's only a couple of investments, and I've seen plans where there's over 100 different investment choices. Especially today, we'll talk a little bit about more target funds. People have 50 target different funds in there, but they have so many different investments in there because they want to make sure that they are coming up with the proper diversification. So you do want to create a lineup, an investment and lineup that has a right amount of funds, because you have a lot of different ages between your participants, some younger, some older. They may want different types of risk and funds. You have some people that have like a lot of risk, some people that want no risk. So you want to make sure that you have enough funds in there, but you don't want to overwhelm somebody in there. So you want to make sure that you have equity funds, stock funds, bond funds, retirement funds that you have. And within the classes, you want to have diversification, large cap, small cap, growth, value, international. So you want to have enough diversification, but you don't want to have so many different choices, because you got to remember, most participants, they're not investment savvy or really understand that. So if they now have to go and spend hours upon hours trying to learn about that, that's not really what you really what you want, and that's not really what they should be doing. So you want to have a good lineup, and you want to have a good lineup with enough diversification, but not too much to be overwhelming.
All right. But dude, I'm sorry. I haven't really done this with you in quite a while, so I'm going to push back on something. How do you know that? I mean, is there a range that you as a fiduciary and with your experience that you know that a plan should have no more than this and no less than this? I mean, you're using words that are a little bit squishy there, brother. And I just wanted to see if you could clarify.
Sure. So we kind of stay within the 10 to 15 range on the amount of funds, ETFs in there, depending upon the size of the group. And how do we come up with that? Well, like I just mentioned before, you can have a large cap value fund, a small cap value fund, a large cap growth, a small cap growth, an international, a REIT fund. So you look at all the different types of asset classes, and you make sure that you have at least one investment, one fund option in each one of these investment in classes. But then you also have some other conversations with the plans and the trustee. Some are really into sustainable funds, so you want to make sure you have a sustainable fund. Some want a technology, a high-end, really aggressive technology fund. So you might add that to your lineup. So it's really talking to the trustee and figuring out, you know, who the audience is. And we'll talk a little bit more about participant education, which we do once a year. And when we have these meetings, I even throw that out. Is there a class that's not missing that somebody would want in here that we should look at? And obviously there's also a lot of different types of bond funds out there and different risks within the bond funds out there. So most of our portfolios have that. We'll talk about model portfolios, which is on top of that. But you can get a nice diversified portfolio with about 15 different funds.
Okay. So thank you for that. And I understand that I was really boxing you in there.
No.
But I love, so one of the things that we talked about in a previous episode, and I think it was in the four-part series, series number one, was that you had talked about the due diligence aspect of what you do as a person who helps manage these 401ks. And a lot of times in your discovery process, you're asking those questions so that you can tailor that proposal on the back end. Now, so let's talk about types of investments. So you shot through those quickly. Let's just deconstruct them for a little bit more. In the one that I really want to make sure that you talk a lot about, because as a person who has participated in many 401ks, one of the things that I found very, very valuable, Larry, was the person who put the plan together, there were model portfolios. And so like I could understand and be educated on specific models, which, you know, makes it a lot easier for somebody who doesn't know all of the other words that you might be using.
Yeah. So let's try to break it down in different bite sizes that people can understand. So the first thing is usually in most 401k plans, you're either going to have mutual funds, and now you're starting to see a lot of ETFs, which is sometimes a less expensive mutual fund. Their expenses a little bit less, but a lot of times the mutual funds have a little bit more opportunities than some ETFs have. So you're going to see either an ETF or a mutual fund. And what that is a basket of individual stocks and or individual bonds. And one of the things that we see in this is, and I'm going to get a little granular here, but if you pick a fund and it's called the Constellation Fund, I'm just making something up. Do you really know what's in that fund? May have large cap stocks, small cap stocks, intermediate stocks, growth, value, and you're leaving it up to manager to move from one asset class to the other asset class. We really prefer pure type of funds. What do I mean by that? That we want a fund that all they do is their specific expertise. So we just want, let's say, a small cap value manager, and the fund is only going to be small cap value. And a lot of times that's actually the name of the fund. But now the participant really understands, okay, if I'm in this small cap value stocks. So creating a fund lineup, which is easier for the participants, makes it one, easier for them to understand. But now if they want to select their particular lineup, they can go and pick and choose and select which ones they want to do. And they're not worrying about, okay, I have this fund that does similar to what this fund does, and they're moving in different directions. So that's really kind of the first thing that we look at and we recommend is stay pure in your asset class type. The second thing is, do you want kind of index or active? And we can have a whole podcast, Matt, just on the difference between index funds, active funds, or kind of a combination funds, which we look at a lot when we put our funds to, you know, funds lineups together, not index, but they're more passive type of funds. And again, you know, talking to the owners and talking to the trustees and explaining to them and explaining why we prefer more passive funds than active funds. But again, that's another choice that you can make, and you can have mostly passive funds and then add a few active funds. So you could have both in your lineups to give the participants their own preferences and their own choices. So that's another kind of area to look into. And then another one is really what we're calling target date funds. So a lot of people now, the participants, they don't really know what to choose. So how much of their money should be in stock funds? How much of money should be in bond funds? I don't really have any idea what that is. And then within each classes, they have no idea how much is they put in there. So there's a lot of these retirement so-called funds, a lot of them called target date funds. So let's say you're planning on retiring in 2030, you can have what's called a target date 2030 fund. And what that does, as you get closer to the actual 2030, it'll lower your allocation to equities, to bonds each year automatically, because they know that you're getting closer to that target date fund. And then you can keep that fund even if you're still working there past 2030. So that's a good option. We actually prefer something better than the target date funds, because the target date funds, now you're relying on whatever's in that fund to make those, you know, make those choices for you. And you may not want to be able to, you know, to see what's going on. So what we do is we create model portfolios, and we call them really, really simply anywhere from conservative to moderate to growth to aggressive growth. We have five different model portfolios that we've created and that we put in there. And for all of the plans that we've done, we just did a study. Over 70% of the participants in our plans select one of the model portfolios. Again, proven that most participants don't understand and don't want to do this. So what are you doing now in this model portfolio? Well, you're kind of hiring us to really manage your investments inside your 401k plan. So what we do is we create the models, how much of allocation in each one of those funds, and we're looking at that. And then we're evaluating all those funds every quarter to see which ones should stay, which ones are on a watch list, which ones occasionally should be replaced. So you don't have to worry about that. You just have to say, okay, I'm fine with a growth fund. I'm fine with 60% in equities and 40% in fixed. And I'm going to hire a firm to do that for, and selecting all the different choices in my 401k plan to have somebody else do it for that. And I think that's, you know, for most part, that's what's proven, that 70% want us to do that. They want to have an expert actually reviewing their investments.
Larry. Oh my God, you just said the data, right? 70% of people are going to take advantage of that. And I think that's one of the things that happens in, you know, people who provide 401ks is they think that the plan participants know as much as they do as the 401k provider. And you're absolutely right. No, they don't. We need to try to keep it as simple as possible and impactful as possible, because we know that if people participate in their 401ks, their retention is better. They're going to feel better taken care of. And more importantly, they're going to be able to plan for retirement.
Absolutely. Of course, there are people that want to do it on their own.
Sure.
And we have enough lineup choices, and they feel free to do that on their own. And I'm going to mention one thing. We'll talk about a little bit more monitoring and reviewing. So one of the things that we add to the 401k lineup is what's called the rebalancing feature. So there's a lot of cool different features that you can add to a 401k plan. And one of it is called the automatic rebalancing feature. So what does that mean? So you can have you make all your selections. So let's say you're picking 10 funds at 10% each. Obviously you're not going to do something that like that, but let's say you're doing that fund. And most people don't look at their 401k plan ever again once they've made their investment choices. So what happens over time? Well, some of those 10% may now have done great and they grow to 20% and they're not making any changes. Well, when you have an automatic rebalancing function in the plan, every so often it'll go back to your original target. So most of our plans, we have that feature. You can elect it as a participant, and we recommend to have it once a year, but you can actually have it set up that four times a year it gets rebalanced. But it's a great feature to have in your plans. And I really see almost all the plans that we take on don't have that feature built in.
Now, one of the other things, and I don't know if this adds a layer of complexity, and I'm apologizing ahead of time if it does, but what happens if part of the 401k that the company wants to provide for their clients, or for, I'm sorry, for their plan participants, for their employees and their team, can there be a company stock component to this? Because I mean, don't we want our people to feel like they have some skin in the game and own some of the company in general?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, bigger firms have that option in there. And there's been, you know, unfortunately, cases where people have put 100% of their money in the company's stock and have had, on the upside, may have had really good returns, but they've also experienced some majorly corrections and lost all of it or most of it. So you just want to be careful. If you do have that option in there, if you want to feel like you're participating in the company because you like the what's going on, that is an option in there. But again, you want to do it in moderation and make sure you're diversified and your asset allocation isn't too much in something like that. And again, if the company is doing well, then you're maybe doing well and you're earning more money and maybe you don't want to have any company stock in there. You'll get it on the outside.
All right. So one of the other things that we've talked about in through the part one and part two of this is really, well, the two major other sections that we need to cover, because you already kind of talked a little bit about some of the monitoring and review stuff, but fees and expenses and participant education. You hinted towards participant education that you do annually for all the people who have hired Heller Wealth Management for this. Let's talk about fees and expenses. I don't want to spend too much time here because I know there's so many ifs and buts and thens and stuff, but what do you want to say about monitoring the fees and expenses of a 401k?
Yeah, every so often you should be benchmarking your plan and seeing what are you paying for in your plan versus what your peers are paying for in your plan, because fees have come down over years. So if you have an older plan, and there could be multiple layers of fees, there is record keeping fees, there are investment advisory fees, there's TPA fees. And then Matt, actually had one person one time when I was talking to them, they actually said, "We don't pay anything for our 401k plan." So, and the reason why they weren't paying anything for their 401k plan, because they weren't paying anything outside, because the expense ratio of the fund was so high that the expense ratio was 2% in there. This is a while back. So they didn't have to pay any other fees because it was coming out of the investment performance of everybody's accounts. So he was feeling, "I'm not paying anything," because he's literally not shelling out any money, but his investments aren't making as much money. So you really need to look and understand all the different fees that you're paying in there, and all the different, you know, some of the funds that I talked about have different classes. Same exact fund, but the classes are actually less expensive in there. So sometimes a fund family will come out with a lower expenses. They're not going to knock on your door and say, "Hey, you can change to this." So you need to be reviewing this. You need to be having, or somebody reviewing it and benchmarking and see how those expenses compare to what else is out there. I'm not saying that they always have to be the least expensive fund, the expenses out there, but you want to see, are they reasonable? Are they, and how they match up to your peer group?
I'm sorry. I just love the visualization of a fund company knocking at your door and saying, "By the way, we lowered the fees. We don't want you to pay us as much as you were paying previously."
Not going to happen. So, and of course, that's what I mentioned earlier about the lawsuits. That's where a lot of these companies have been hit with these lawsuits. Big name companies that have been hit with these lawsuits because the attorneys now see that, hey, this is an opportunity to file a class action, and they've won a lot of these lawsuits. So be careful and make sure that you're reviewing your expenses on an ongoing basis.
All right. Anything else in fees and expenses? Or you want to move on to
plan? I think we're good at fees and expenses. Let's talk about participant education. And this is so important. And sometimes with owners and with companies, you know, they battle a little bit because they don't want to have some of these education meetings for their participants. And, you know, I try to explain to them, it's so important. It just makes them feel better and helps retention to having these education meetings. So we kind of go through a lot of different options on what you should be doing in these education meetings and how important it is to saving. And the biggest thing that we do when we do this is the word compounding and trying to get the younger people putting in a little bit each year and making sure that they do that. Sometimes I'll go through an exercise and I'll ask somebody how much coffee that they buy each. And I said, if you gave up one of those coffees, you put that in here and compounding it over 40 years, how much it can be, it starts to open up their eyes a little bit. And we've had fun in some of these meetings. A lot of times now, unfortunately, we're doing a lot of these meetings Zoom, but I've actually walked into a meeting where so many participants were not taking advantage of the match. And I threw money on the table. Oh. And I said, you guys are missing out on all this cash. It's free money. And they're not doing that to get the free money. So having the education meetings, but there's even more than that. There's online resources. You can go online and there's calculators, how much you need to put away to reach certain amounts of money in retirement. A good plan will have all these type of things. And even emails. What we do is we send out education emails and it's geared towards their age. Which is, technology is great, but now we know the age of all of the participants and all of our plans. We make sure we get that and we put that in there. So monthly an email will go out and it'll be specifically a different email to someone who's 20 years old than someone who's 60 years old because they have, different stages of their lives. So making sure that you have the education and all that in there, it just helps. Another part of the investment strategy.
Well, bring it home, brother. Let's go ahead and wrap up in the four-part series.
Again, the investments and, making sure that you have the right investments in there, enough investments, not too many in there, making sure the fees are reasonable, making sure that you're providing the education for your employees and making sure that every so often you're benchmarking. We offer a free benchmarking analysis for anyone out there. So we can benchmark your plan against your peers to kind of show you what you have, what you're missing, what some of the features that you have, and what some of the features that you don't have. So feel free. Anyone is interested, they can reach out to us directly on our website, hellowealthmanagement.com, and schedule a call with myself or one of our advisors, or feel free to reach out to us at 631-248-3600.
Well, Larry, thank you very much for another magnificent episode. Listen, if you are a business owner or if you are a 401k participant and you're three episodes into this four-part miniseries and you realize that there are some things here that you would really like to bring to your organization, or if you are the organization, please go ahead and reach out on the website and the phone number that Larry just gave so that they can also have the opportunity to learn more about how they can participate more in a 401k, maximize savings, compound, like Larry was saying, and also help you retain the highest and best employees. All right. So for Larry, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.